You're listening to The Record from KUOW. I'm Jeannie Yandel. We travel to a part of the brain where no neuroscientist has gone before. Well, more accurately, we travel to a part of the brain where no neuroscientist has been for more than a century, until Jason Yateman. Yateman's a neuroscientist here in Seattle, and he studies how the brain learns to read. A couple of years ago, Jason Yateman stumbled into a secret place in the human mind. It's a bundle of fibers in the backs of our brains. He believes that bundle of fibers hasn't been seen for over 100 years. How did we lose track of this part of the brain in the first place? My colleague Marcy Silman talked with Yateman about his discovery, or perhaps more accurately, his rediscovery. He told her the story begins at Stanford, where he was a grad student.
And I saw in every subject, there's this big vertical bundle of wire just going right into this brain region, every subject. And I started doing my research and looking for it in modern articles and looking in textbooks, and I didn't see it anywhere. So my advisor, Brian Wandell, and I were just getting ready to write an article, and we're trying to figure out how to name this pathway because we couldn't find it anywhere. And a little ways before publication, Brian started sending emails out to colleagues in neurosurgery just with our image, saying, have any of you seen this? Have any of you seen this this fiber pathway? And one of his colleagues responded that they thought they had seen it in a medical textbook from a long time ago. And that's what started the whole search.
So you initially thought that you had discovered some part of the brain that nobody had ever found before.
That was the original thought, yeah, that we couldn't find it anywhere in the modern literature. And it's surprising, you know, you don't often have a structure that just gets forgotten like this.
So what do you, as a Stanford grad student with your advisor, do with information like that? Where do you start? Where did you go?
Well, that's actually where Kevin Weiner, one of my other co-authors on this paper, came into play. And Kevin and I started making appointments to go to the historical archives in the basement of Stanford's medical library and actually checking out these atlases from the 1800s and the early 1900s. And it's a very controlled environment. You make an appointment. You have someone watching you while you're looking through these books. You check them out, and you stand there in a room and can look through the pages.
And so you were looking for something that looked like what you had seen in these functional studies you had done.
Exactly. And we knew where it should be. It should be in the back of the brain. We knew its orientation. And the atlases are organized. So, you know, Wernicke's atlas, it starts at the front of the brain. You see slices going through each part of the brain. So we flip back to the pages that had the back of the brain, the occipital lobe, and we found a schematic of this pathway, the vertical occipital fasciculus.
When did you know that this was the same thing that you had seen?
We were pretty sure right away. The images were pretty conclusive.
How old was this medical textbook that you found the image in?
It was an old version of Gray's Anatomy from, I think, 1913 or 1912.
Wow. How did you feel when you realized, did you feel a little bit cheated that you hadn't discovered it?
It actually made it much more fun. I mean, the idea of discovering a new pathway actually to me isn't as exciting as getting to go through this rich history and understand the story of how it was discovered and the conflict that arose from that and how different researchers just interacted with each other at that time.
I'm talking with Jason Yateman, a research scientist at the University of Washington's Institute for Learning and Brain Sciences. And Jason, this vertical occipital fasciculus was sort of out of the picture for about a century. Where did it go?
Yeah, so we believe it was lost in the historical archives due to, first, a conflict around its discovery. Second, confusion around the naming of the pathway.
How did it get discovered the first time around?
The first time it was discovered by Carl Wernicke in the late 1800s.
So what was it called?
Well, so Wernicke was German, so it was in German, and I can't pronounce it, but I'm going to go with Sengreketa Occipital Bundel, which means vertical occipital pathway.
So Bundel. I like that.
I think I got that right with the umlaut there, Bundel.
You guys use really, because we are in the 21st century, not the 19th, you have a lot of cool technology that lets you look at brains. How did Mr. Dr. Wernicke and his colleagues work on the human brain then?
So back in those days, it was all post-mortem. So it was done with, and actually his original discovery was in a monkey of an undisclosed species. And so what they'd do, they'd section the brain, and it was a very different way of working, where now we're depending on computer algorithms and different kind of sophisticated processing means to measure these structures. And back then, they were looking with their eye and very carefully. They'd go through these sections very carefully and look at it in different ways, then look at it in a different brain to see if they can see the same structure.
Dr. Wernicke found this part of the brain, but it wasn't without controversy at that time.
It wasn't without controversy. So interestingly, his mentor, Theodor Meinhardt, who actually trained many famous neurologists of the day, had a principle of brain organization where he said all pathways, all association fiber pathways, travel anterior to posterior, front to back in the brain.
Uh-huh.
Now this pathway, the vertical occipital fasciculus,
it's vertical.
As you can tell from the name, it goes vertically. And as Wernicke says in his original description, he says, we find this massive fiber bundle that goes perpendicular to the primary orientation vertically. And so this created a bit of a conflict in the era.
So I'm assuming that more than Wernicke saw this at some point in time. So people found this part of the brain. They wrote about it. And then fast forward more than 100 years, what happened? Where did this part of the brain get lost?
That is the question that fascinated us when we got started with this. Where did this part of the brain get lost? So one of the reasons we think was this controversy. You had Wernicke who saw it, and his student found it in human. And then you had a number of researchers who started drawing it into their schematics. Then you had a number of other researchers who followed Meinhardt's tradition and kind of ignored that it was discovered. So these two camps where half the schematics had it, half of it didn't. The ones that had it would go with a few different names or change their name in different schematics. So you can see just how it creates this confusing story. Imagine you're a student of the era and you pick up two textbooks. One acknowledges the pathway and one doesn't. The one that acknowledges it gives it three different names. So it's easy to imagine how this can kind of just get buried in the history past.
In brain
history past.
So Jason Yeatman, you're telling me that in part because of this dispute between Wernicke and his mentor and the disagreement in the neuroscientists of the time, Wernicke's discoveries really just kind of fell into the dust.
That's our theory. We can't trace it specifically because there's so many intervening factors. But that's what it really seems like. And you see some scientists who really kind of vehemently attack the existence of this pathway, and they'll write things lines of, I sectioned the brain and I looked in this area and I don't see anything like what Wernicke's talking about. Another scientist would come back and, describe in detail why that other scientist was wrong. And that's kind of in this paper. We follow this story from beginning to modern times.
So it's sort of like an anatomical mystery.
An anatomical mystery. That's a good name for it.
Jason Yeatman is a research scientist at the University of Washington's Institute for Learning and Brain Sciences, or iLabs. He rediscovered a lost part of the human brain, and today he and his co-authors are publishing their findings in a paper for the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.